Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 That fan, I can't tell if it's an asset or something else. Is that disturbing to anyone as far as the breeze being on you directly? Is it good? Cool? Is it cool, man? Okay. Because if it's too much, we can turn it off. Anybody becomes disturbed, just let me know. We'll shut it off. I'll start off with a story. Maybe some of you heard the story, but it's a very instructive story. It's an analogy, or we might even say an allegory. But first, we begin by offering our respects to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vilanta Swami Dinamine Namaste Sarasvati Deve Bhavavani Pracharine Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Pascharti Desatarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sivasadi Gaura Bhaktarinda
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
There once was a man who had four wives. Has anybody here fit that description? And now for the ladies, we might also use the opposite, having four husbands. Okay. So the story is a man had four wives. Listen up, this is a very interesting story. He loved his fourth wife the best. She was the favorite of all wives. He gave her everything, his time, his attention, his resources, and his affection. All he could think of all the time was that wife, although he had three others. His third wife, he was also very attentive to and made sure she had everything she needed in life. He kept her secure, he kept her happy, he kept her very much protected. And he also gave a lot of affection. Of course, his fourth wife was his favorite, but his third wife also was showered a lot of his time and attention. His second wife was a little less dear to him, but still he was concerned about her welfare. And he did whatever he could to keep her happy and also entertained. His first wife didn't really care about her at all. He neglected her, never talked to her. He would avoid her association. But you know, she was the most attentive to him. She gave him the most time, the most affection, and the most care. But still, he was the complete opposite with her. His other wives were more important, especially his fourth wife. Although she, at times, wouldn't follow his direction. And she also gave him a lot of headaches and problems. But still, it was his favorite wife. Can you move that a little bit away? Yeah, the air is not good for me. Yeah. And one day, of course, in the lives of every living being on this planet, that day comes along when nobody likes. It's called death. We read about it, about others, but we also get a chance to participate. So don't feel left out. And it was time for him to go. And he had 24 hours left, according to all doctor regulations and analysis. So he said to his fourth wife, he said, "My dear wife, you know how much time, affection, and care and attention I gave to you. I did everything to make you happy. Will you come with me when I leave?" She said, "That's it, Prabhu." Nice knowing you. But we're finished. That's all. Thank you for whatever you did, but that's it. No more. Forget about me. So, turned to his third wife, hoping that she would comply with his desires as well. She says, "Please, will you come with me? Will you be with me? You know how much I protected you, and I made sure you were happy and had whatever you need." She said, "Yes, but when you die, I will get remarried." Such is life. Second wife, he turned to her and he said, "I know I didn't give you as much attention as the other wives, but still, deep in my heart there was a lot of affection and care. You remember all the times we had together?" And she said, "You know, I'll see you off to the grave, but that's it. I'll be there when they put you in the ground. I can do that much." So there was no one left but his neglected first wife. So he turned to her and said, in desperation, knowing that she was the only one left, he didn't even give her any kind of, because he knew he neglected her. He just said, "Will you come with me?" And she said, "I will never leave you. I'm always with you." His fourth wife was his body. When we die, the body, that's the end. We give it so much time, care, attention, and whatever it needs, we try to give it, make it happy, we try to make it comfortable, we try to situate it nicely. But when that time comes, that's the end. The relationship's over, it's finished. The third wife is our possessions and our money. When we die, somebody else gets it. Haribo. We work so hard, we struggle so much, and we accumulate so many things, and then as we go, we think, "I can't take it with you. Somebody else will get it." Oh, that's okay. It's not so bad. The second wife is our friends and relatives. They'll come, they'll see us off to the grave. They'll even cry a few tears. Maybe write a few inscriptions on the postcard that they give you after you die, which you can't read. And then that's it. They may talk about you for a little while, but after, as time goes on, they forget you. Friends and relatives. We all have those. But the first wife, that's the soul. That's the one we forget about. That's the one we're pushed in the background. We have so much time for our body and our possessions and our relatives and our friends and our activities in this world. But when time comes, they can't save us, nor can they help us. But the soul, that is actually us. We are actually the spirit soul. We are that eternal living being that never leaves. So when we die, the mind is always thinking, "What can I take with me?" You can't take anything, but your soul will come with you. You will come with your mind. Actually, we think mistakenly that we are the mind, or even the body. But actually, the soul is the actual living being. So we put so many other things, what we say, first in our life, and we give it so much time, care, and attention. But as time goes on, and we see that whatever time, attention, and care we give to these things, you know, it's just, it's like money lost. Of course, we all practically understand that there is some requirements for these things. The body must be cared for. There must be some arrangements to live nicely. And friends and relatives, they come by way of activities in this world. But none of these, what we say, these also are under the control of time. So we are under the control of time, and those who we look for help and happiness are also under the control of time. They can't save us. They can't help us. The only one who can help us is Krishna. And as we take care of our soul, then actually our soul is part of Krishna. We are the eternal, what we say, particle of the absolute truth. So death, or the end of this body, is actually something that is not such a bad thing. You know, it's not even such a bad thing. I mean, many of you are young here. I know this doesn't make sense to you. You have your plans, your life is ahead of you. You have so many ideals and goals in life and pursuits. And things are in place, and sometimes things are looking good. But we should never forget who we are. As soon as we forget who we are, we get lost in the activities that we perform. And we think that the activities that we perform are going to bring us the happiness we're looking for. But actually, the happiness we're looking for is simply to understand who we are. That's all. It's as easy and as simple as that. As soon as we remember who we are and act to feed, to nourish our existence. The body gets nourished by food. The body gets nourished by fresh air and water. The body gets nourished by relationships of other persons who have also bodies. But the soul gets nourished also. There's a nourishment for the soul. The nourishment for the soul is to hear and chant the glories of the Lord. That is the food for the soul. That gives the soul, what we say, it awakens the soul to its existence. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, one of the greatest of all acharyas, he was a family man. Many of our great souls that we worship, as the acharyas and the great saints, were family members. They weren't all renunciates who gave up worldly activity. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we see him not as a great soul, but as someone who is, when we say, foremost in our teachings and the principles we follow. He was a family man. He had 10 children. And he took care of his children nicely. He was also a very, what we say, established person in the material world. He was a magistrate, a judge in the British Raj. And his qualifications for his activities were so much praised by the British that they gave him special care and consideration, and they even gave him his own personal railway card to go back and forth in the work. How much he was loved by the British because of his expertise. He wasn't like, because he was such a great devotee, he was neglecting his material responsibilities. He was good at it, and the best. In fact, he was so good at his material responsibilities that what he could do in terms of judging others when they were brought before them for trial, he could do in half the time that the other judges could do the same thing. He was so expert because of his devotional life, because of his deep understanding of his relationship with God and his knowledge of his occupation. He had 10 children. And all his children were nicely cared for. They weren't neglected because of large families. His wife was very happy. And she took care of the family very nicely. But he was a great acharya. He's a great acharya. He wrote over 100 books and newsletters, gave speeches, and actually predicted that in time will come that people from all races of the world. At that time, India was known, or was the place where Krishna consciousness was practiced. He had a vision. One day he had a vision, and in that vision he saw people from all the races chanting and dancing together, singing Jai Sachinandana, Jai Sachinandana, Jai Sachinandana. He saw it in a vision, and he could understand by that vision, it wasn't a dream, it was a vision, that soon this Krishna consciousness movement will go to all corners of the world. And we can see, now we are in the future of his present, We can see it is actually happening. And what is that? What is this Krishna consciousness movement? It is the way to awaken our lost, what we say, identity. As soon as we know who we are, then we know what to do. If a person doesn't know who they are, or they have a slight idea who they are, but they're acting according to what they think they are, then they're neglecting themselves, really. So we have to take care of the body. Why is the body special? Even within Krishna consciousness, we give a lot of, what we say, concern for the body. Why is the body so special? Why? Because I'm in it. It's my home. That's where I live. I live inside this body. Just like if you live inside a house, you take care of that. You keep it clean, you keep it nice, you keep it orderly, and you fix it when it gets repaired, needs a repair, like that. So you're concerned about the dwelling you live in. So in the same way, we live inside this body, so we take care of the body. But we should understand, I'm not the body. I'm the soul. So I'm taking care of the body, that's important. But what am I doing for my soul? What am I doing for myself? Not my soul, myself. And that is to hear and chant the glories of the Lord. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if you want to understand me, if you want to understand your relationship with me, then just hear and chant my glories. He says this in the 7th chapter. He says, just by hearing about me, you can know me. Asam sayam samagramam yatayachusi tachtrinu. You can know me without doubt, just simply by hearing. And when you know Krishna, yasmin bhavanti sarva eva vijnata bhavanti. When you know Krishna, guess what? There's nothing else to be known. Because God is everything. So when you know Krishna, you know everything. And even if you don't know how many people are in China, still there's no loss. But when I say you know everything you need to know. In other words, you may not know, the lifespan of a ladybug, but you'll know what you need to know. And what do you need to know? How to live in this world and at the same time become happy. Because that's why the whole principle of life is to become happy. And happiness is on the spiritual platform. What people try for happiness in this material world is simply an attempt to find something that doesn't exist. It's like the story of the man who... he lost some money, so he's looking all around for the money. And it's in the evening time, so it's a little dark. And his friend comes along, and he's there looking and they're looking. He says, what are you looking for? Well, I lost some money. Can you help me? He says, all right, I'll look. So they're looking. After a while, his friend says to him, are you sure you lost the money here? He says, no, I didn't. I lost it down there, but there's more light here. More light here. So we can't see the soul, and sometimes we don't even know it exists. So what seems to be the reality is what we see in front of us, what the eyes see, what the ears hear, what the senses can perceive. But that is like looking for to satisfy that aspect of our existence, like looking for the money where it doesn't exist. So happiness is not on the bodily platform. It can never be on the bodily plane, because the body is simply a source of misery. Krishna says that in Bhagavad Gita. Your body is simply a burden, that's all. It's a punishment. Hari Bol. But you like your punishment, so but the body is a punishment. But what is life? Life is to get rid of the punishment and come back to the eternal aspect of our existence. And that is loving devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we can live in this body, in this world, happily when we seek out the proper golden life. And what is the goal of life? Prema Pumartha Mahan. That means to try to awaken within us the essence of our being. The essence of our being is happiness, but the happiness comes with our relationship with Krishna. That is the happiness. As soon as we contact Krishna, then we begin to open up what is called the Anandambhuti Vardhanam, the unlimited ocean of happiness. No one can perceive happiness in an unlimited way. I mean, just think. I mean, seriously think. Think, what in this world can you conceive of as the greatest form of happiness? I mean, to sit on the beach of Bahama and surrounded by so many delightful personalities, sipping on your cool lemonade, and just free from all the bodily and mental pains that you usually have. I mean, people think of happiness in different ways, right? People dream, you know, but life is like a dream. Everyone's dreaming about that happiness that I'll soon get someday or other, right? That's the world goes on like that. But what is actually happiness? Real happiness is simply the contact with the soul, with Krishna. As soon as the soul contacts Krishna, there's bliss, there's happiness, there's joy. It's not something you do. It's something that is already there, but it's covered. It's just covered. Our life is covered by what we say layers of illusion due to our association with matter. As we cut away the layers, it's just like the closer you get to the fire, the more you feel the warmth and you see the light. The closer we get to Krishna, the more we can feel the presence of Krishna. And the more the soul awakens to both happiness and knowledge. So this is Krishna consciousness. And to do that, it's a simple process, to hear and chant the glories of the Lord. Satatam kirtayanto mam. Just like we were dancing and chanting. Some of you think, well, maybe you people are quite mad. And maybe it's just some frustration that you need to exercise. But this is just a small taste. What we were experiencing tonight is like a drop of 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 the happiness that is available within the soul. Our enthusiasm to chant and dance is just to glorify the Lord. And in glorifying the Lord, the soul starts to come in contact, because that glorification is spiritual. When you glorify the Lord, you're on the spiritual platform, or you're performing spiritual activities. And as we cut through the layers that are covering the soul's relationship with Krishna through the glorification, we feel the presence of Krishna. We can experience His presence directly. Not indirectly or theoretically, but directly. Because Krishna is the closest thing to you. Krishna is already there. He's within our heart. He's within the existence as the all-pervading energy, spiritual energy. And He's there as Gopi Vallabha. Gopi, Radha Gopi Vallabha. He's there. He's there in the deity. He's there in your heart. He's there in the energy. He's there in the hearts of all living beings. He's everywhere. So that same Krishna is, you can't get away from Him. Even if you run as fast as you can and you make all kinds of plans to somehow escape His existence, you just wind up getting closer to Him. You can't get away. He's everywhere. But it's like being asleep and can't understand what's going on the waking platform. So therefore Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago, Gora Chandra Bole, Kota Nija Maya, Jayo Maya, Pisa Chita Kole. Now Pisa Chita, you don't like that word. That's called witch. Maya, or illusion, is like a witch. And what does a witch do? Sucks your blood. That's not nice, because you need your blood, right? Helps keep the body going. So a witch is something that is an enemy in one sense, in a real sense. So the illusions that we experience in this world are sapping our spiritual energy, are sapping our spiritual life, and we're forgetting about. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, wake up. Wake up. I don't want to wake up. I like the snooze button. I go back to sleep. And we're going back to sleep. And what are we doing? We're just wasting our time and energy. So spiritual life, you know, sometimes we think, yes, when I get old and I can't move and I've tried everything, then I'll take the spiritual life. Yes, we think like that. But then Prahlad Maharaj says something very, very powerful. And he's a pure devotee. He says, old means just before you die. And nobody knows when it's going to happen. There are a lot of stories. I don't want to scare you because you look already scared. anymore. But to give you the reality of existence, time doesn't... Generally, you don't get a notice. If you get a notice, you're lucky, you know. You're lucky. I just the other day, one friend that I'd never met before, we were corresponding on email, he came to see me, and we were talking. He says, you know, in about 1 week, three people that were very close to me died. And he said, oh, it was just too much for me. And they were all younger than me, all three of them. And so for him, it was a shock, because somebody, you know, very close to them left their body. But death is not so bad. What is worse than death is to waste your life. That's worse than death. There are some great souls. Saint Teresa, one of the greatest of all Christian saints, Saint Teresa of Lisieux from France, she lived 24 years. But her whole life was in love with God. She could only think about God. She could only pray to God. And she made God her husband in every aspect of her existence. Sankaracharya, a great soul, preached all over India. He lived 36 years. Lord Jesus Christ lived 33 years. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lived 48 years. So many great personalities lived the perfection of life in a very short time. So it's not how long you live. That's not really the question. It's what you do whatever time you have while you're here. That's the question. So we should consider that time is precious. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati says time is precious. It means that there's something valuable in time. Chanaka Pandit, one of the greatest of all philanthropists, moralists, logicians. He was like the Confucius of India, Chanaka Pandit. He says, even if you are a crorepati, if you have millions of dollars or millions of rupees, you can't buy back 1 second of life. Once that second is gone, it's gone. Time can never be recaptured. So time is valuable, it's precious. So Bhaktivedanta Thakur says something. He says, forget the past that sleeps. Because people are always thinking, oh, I did this wrong, I did that wrong, this went wrong, and you're lamenting about the past. Just living in the past, right? Forget the past, it's gone, it sleeps. He says, near the future dream at all. The future's a dream. Everyone's dreaming about the future. In the future, in the future, in the future. I will be like this. I will get this. I will do this. And I will be happy. Yes, in the future. And it's a declaration, too. In the future. Everyone thinks in terms of the future, right? He says, forget the past that sleeps. Near the future, dream at all. Don't dream about the future. He says, act in times that are with thee, in progress ye shall call. Live in the present. The present is the most, now is the most important time. Every minute is right now. Because what's the future will be the present. And if you don't live in the present, the future is not going to be any different than the present. Right? What happens in the future is what you do in the present. It's not that the future is all of a sudden going to say, ha ha, here I am. A lot different than the past, present. Yes. No, it's not like that. I'm sorry if you're making me laugh. I just can't help it. Because, you know, when we apply logic to people, to life in this world, it looks ridiculous. It's ridiculous. That's why it's so funny. What goes on as life is ridiculous. Because people are acting according to what they're not. They're spending on money they don't have, on what they don't need, in order to impress people they don't like. That's life, basically, in the material world. So he says, live in the present. So God is with us right now. What you do right now really is what will happen in the future. Each moment in the present adds to the moment of the future. And then the future becomes the present. And then the present becomes wonderful. Then we don't have to live in the future or lament about the past, because the present is the best of all times. So the present means that whatever is important in life, put that first. That's basically the essence of what I'm saying. Put what's important first in life. Don't wait. And what is important, the scriptures actually give us. Atato brahma jigyasa. This human form of life is meant for self-realization. There's no second goal. The goals that we achieve and the goals we pursue in this world may situate us in this world in order to live. But happiness is on the spiritual platform. Success is on the spiritual platform. We want a happy marriage? Put Krishna in your marriage. You want to be successful in your business? Make Krishna the object of the activities of your business. Whatever you do, keep Krishna first. That's all. Yad karosi yad anasi, yad jahosi dadat. Put Krishna first. And you know, Krishna is first. There's one thing about Krishna. He's a nice guy. He's really a nice guy. The more you get to know him, you'll realize how nice he is. But there's one thing he doesn't like. He doesn't like to be second, or third, or fourth, or fifth. He wants to be first. He's like a naughty child. He wants your attention. Why? Because he loves you. That's why. And love means to keep the object of the love first. So Krishna is giving his love to us in so many ways. So all we have to do is put Krishna first. And it's not hard. It's really not hard. Chant the holy names of the Lord and read the books, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. Come to the temple, establish a temple in your own home. You can do that. Worship with your family, worship with your friends. Maybe it's not so easy to come to the temple and perform spiritual activities. Make your home a temple. Make every home a temple. Then the world becomes like a place where the God is worshipped. So keep Krishna first in your life. And then your life will be happy. That's what Krishna is saying. Just make me first. That's all. So how do we do that? Krishna says, Manmana bhava mad bhakto mam yuji mam nara. Think of me. We have to think of something, right? Think of Krishna. I mean, there's so many things to think about, right? But why not think of Krishna? And we think, well, if I think of Krishna, I won't be able to do what I need to do. No, Krishna will do it for you. And it comes out better. If you think of Krishna, Krishna will do what you want to do, and it'll work better. That's the magic of thinking of Krishna. Think of Krishna. The mind has to have some thought in there. Think of Krishna. He says, worship me according to your time, away from your responsibilities in this world. Do some worship. Offer food to Krishna. Offer aarti to Krishna. Talk to Krishna. Give him some presents. Krishna's there. He's not so far away. Everyone thinks, oh God. You know, sometimes we learn when we grow up that God is just so far away from this world. But that's where we want him to be. He's not like that. He's very close. He's the closest. He's right there with us every second. Worship Krishna. Become the devotee of Krishna. That means serve Krishna in different ways. And offer your obeisances to Krishna. Offer prayers to Krishna. Bow down before Krishna. The humble approach to the Lord is the way to approach the Lord. So these are the formulas. We can do that. We can do it in our homes. We should do it in our homes. Whether we're a student, whether we're a businessman, whether we're a housewife, business lady, whatever our occupation or worldly responsibilities are, put Krishna there. And life will become life. Because the scriptures say, until one takes up a spiritual process, one hasn't reached the human form of life. Human form of life begins when one dedicates their life to God. Because that's the purpose of life. That is the purpose of life. So thank you very much for listening. And please continue to come. And most of all, most important, if you want to be with God, just chant Hare Krishna. Anytime, anywhere, any place, you can chant Hare Krishna. And just that chanting alone means that there is some connection happening with Krishna. And the more, the deeper the chanting, the more the connection is experienced. So thank you very much, Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much. So the curtains will be open for the deities in 5 minutes, but I think we will go on to preserve our glorious Mr. Nitin. Is he here?